Voilà, si on peut maintenant arrêter les photos. Merci beaucoup. Donc, vous levez la main et s'il y a une première question. Oui, monsieur.
Thank you. Richard Brooks from Sunday Times. Mike, I'd like to start this by saying I thought it was a terrific film. I know in the past we've had a few disagreements, but I thought it was a really, really good film.
Can you wave your hand? I don't know where you are.
Sorry, here.
Thank you.
Could I just ask you...
You know, I don't want to answer any of your questions, and you know why, so I'd like to go on to the next question. I'm sorry, I refuse to answer a question from you, and you know why that is.
I don't actually know.
Well, now is not the time to discuss it, and you do, but I don't want to answer your question. Sorry. Next question, please.
Bruce Kirkland from the Toronto Sun, Sun Media in Canada. A question for Mike Lee. As someone who now feels mortal and vulnerable at this, you know, at my age, I'm wondering if watching this movie, I feel even more vulnerable and moved profoundly by the sadness and the lack of secrets and the lack of lies of the characters in this movie. And that intrigues me. And I'm wondering if what, and it's not as if you're telling a story that gives solutions or answers to our feeling of mortality. And I'm curious if you could discuss that, the weight of that, of growing old and the seeming difficulty of life.
That's a very, it's a very good question, and thank you for it. It's also a very difficult question to answer. And I think the difficulty, that difficulty is implicit in your question, actually. I suppose life does become at the same time clearer and more complicated. And I suppose at the in the context of what you're talking about, I think, the film is about how we come to terms with life, how we face ourselves and each other, how we face what we are, and that struggle. It's difficult to... I don't think the film... I would suggest the film doesn't, as it were, have solutions, as I think you say. It's, I think it simply, I hope, raises for all of us, for all of you, as it does for me, you know, thoughts to go away, feelings to have about how we deal with life. And as much as anything, that is a matter of how we deal with and learn how to enjoy and celebrate life as we go on and get older, but also how to deal with its exigencies. That's a little bit of a vague sort of an answer, but that's the territory we're in. There are no black and whites, as far as I'm concerned.
J'aurais, avant de vous passer la parole, j'ai, peut-être parce que j'étais très ému par ce film, qui m'a vraiment énormément bouleversé, j'ai failli à mes devoirs, qui sont de présenter tout de même les personnalités à cette table. Donc je voudrais présenter à partir de ma gauche trois des grands interprètes et fidèles interprètes de Mike Lee qui sont à nouveau dans ce film. Ruth Sheen, Jerry. Jim Broadbent, Tom. Leslie Manville, Mike Lee, Dick Pope, qui a fait la photographie de très nombreux films de Mike Lee, et la productrice Georgina Lowe. Vous savez, Georgina Lowe est productrice de ce film qui est dédié à Channing Williams, le producteur très fidèle qui a disparu et à qui ce film est dédié. Maintenant, deuxième question.
Bonjour. I'm Sara Nabil from the Egyptian television. I'm just asking about movies in it talks about the life, normal life days, normal lifestyle. How it's hard to make a movie about life and everyday normal days for everybody and don't make the watcher feel boring. They are watching normal days, they are watching normal people, but you are trying to make them not feeling boring. How it is hard, how it's hard for you and for the actor and for actress. And it's is it interesting to make a movie about normal day life, and what is the message for you from your point of view to get to the people, plus making learning him how to enjoy their lives?
Should I go first?
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I think the answer is simple, really. As far as I'm concerned, people are not boring. Nobody is boring. Life is fascinating. And there is no difference between life in what you call the ordinary world, the lives of ordinary people, and any other people. Like human beings, we are endlessly fascinating. And so the question you ask is not an issue or a consideration, certainly as far as I'm concerned. And I think I can speak for all of us here. We are all motivated by a natural passion to look at life and to celebrate what we are and as truthfully as possible. So the question has no real relevance because it doesn't come into it, because people aren't boring. I mean, they're boring if you think they're boring. But no, I mean, if one thinks they're boring, then they are. But I don't. Anybody care to add to that?
I think it's very interesting to put characters like this centre stage, because that doesn't often happen in films. You know, you tell the story about normal people who are having a difficult life. I mean, it's just interesting that certainly in Mike's films, he makes those, as it were, smaller people the centre of the story.
I also think that it's what you choose to show on screen, because obviously we did lots of improvisations, which might not have been boring, but you probably wouldn't have wanted to watch them. So I think that the things that we chose to look at were interesting because they affect everybody. We all have friends who have problems and we all deal with it in various ways. So I think you could relate to it, and I think that's what's probably more interesting.
Yeah, what the process of working is incredibly detailed. So on the surface, you might think that is a quite a simple character who is not particularly rich or interesting, but the amount of work that we do into the research and building up the characters and getting all the detail hopefully gives them a sort of a background and a hinterland and an interest that is perhaps more evident than it might be.
I mean, I think it's... I would say that... I mean, Dick and I have worked together as cinematographer and director for 20 years. And, I mean, I've always been concerned, for as long as I've ever been making films or indeed stage plays, with celebrating and enjoying the lives of ordinary people. That's what it's about. And that's partly a reflection from the world that I'm come out of. And Dick, who also comes out of the real world, came from a background, as well as a feature film cinematographer, as a documentary maker. And so we have a natural, quite apart from what the actors are talking about, which is very important, which is the work that goes on to make it possible for us to aspire to the condition of documentary, in the sense that what we're actually filming has an integrity and a reality and a truth. What we're concerned with in terms of the image making and the actual cinema is, you know, looking at the world, shooting on location, being out there. And here we've tried to create a world where you really feel the seasons, you feel the air they're breathing, you feel a connection with the earth, you see it, and it should resonate with what ordinary people's lives are about, what you call ordinary people. Do you want to add it?
Madame?
Hello, my name is Maria Luz Clement from the German news agency DPA. And the question is for you, Mr. Lee. So don't you think that you are too mean with the character of Mary? And there is also the couple's life, which is perfect. It's a normal couple. And nowadays we don't have, there are many people living single, there are many people that they are happy, and there are many people that not just a woman and a wife being a couple. So I'm sorry, I'm too nervous.
So why mean? To talk about why you...
Because she's alone.
So is Ken, of course.
Excuse me?
So is Ken, the guy, the friend...
Yeah, but she's alone. Her life is a disaster. She just has a job. So I think it was too... You were too mean to her.
Why do you say that I was too... I agree that her life is a disaster, but I want to know why you think that the film or I are mean to her.
Because you depict her as a... as a helpless person.
Yes, but... That you may argue that she is, but I think I would say, to answer your question, that I can't understand the notion of it being mean. I would say the film is sympathetic to her. But if you're saying, why have somebody who has these problems, that's something we don't want to know, we don't want to know about, therefore, you know, you're giving us a mean experience in showing it, then I have to say, well, you know, this is the kind of cinema which... shows you life the way it is. But there's nothing in the film, I would insist, that sets up Mary or presents Mary in a mean spirit. We simply look at her in a pretty three-dimensional way, and I allow you, I invite you to be sympathetic, to care for her, to judge her if you want to, or however you react to her. But the film is not so narrow and prescriptive as to qualify for the label of meanness when it comes to her or anybody else in the film.
But the joy comes just from the married couple. They are happy, the others are not happy.
Yes, but that's in the nature of what we're looking at. That is the dynamics of this, the arrangement of this story, in order for us to think about and care about a whole lot of aspects of what life is about. That's what it's about.
Are you suggesting that it's wrong to show somebody single who is having a bad time?
No, of course not. Of course not. I'm asking why the joy...
Why we have just the happiness with a married couple, like we always had, and...
Well, listen, there are plenty of films about unhappy married couples.
Of course. Of course.
So, you know... That,
of course.
This,
but
this is what this one happens to be dealing with.
It does sound as though you have a problem with looking at something positive and healthy. And it sounds like it. I mean, you know, are you suggesting that we're wasting your valuable time when you could be celebrating everybody having a bad time by having these characters who are having an... I mean, the thing is, they've obviously... Tom and Jerry... Yeah, oh, say again. I think you should. I've got a very good counsellor for you to talk to, actually.
Not me, though. I'm retired.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Eric Helmersson. I work for a news agency in Sweden. I have a question for Mrs. Manville.
Miss Manville.
Sorry about that, Miss Manville. some actors say that one of the hardest parts of the job is to act really drunk. And you have many scenes where Mary is not only drunk, but she's really, really vulnerable, emotionally naked. Could you please tell us how you approach those scenes and, your process? Thank you.
Well, I don't really have a process. I think that what happens, which I won't go into with the nature of working with Mike, is that by the time you come to shoot the film, you get very used to jumping in and out of character quite quickly. So it's a discipline that you become familiar with and comfortable with. Certainly, to answer your question specifically, I did find, and I am really one of those actors, and I think we all are, we don't walk around the set carrying around our characters. You know, we do a take, then we have a cup of tea and we have a laugh, and then we do another take, and it's like that. But I did find doing the drunk scenes that it helped me to kind of keep a little bit of space and privacy around myself, and that sort of staying in a drunk frame of mind helped me. I'd never played drunk before, so it was new territory, and it wasn't something I made a fuss about or was particularly flagged up, and I don't think I particularly shared it with Mike either. But I just, when we weren't filming, when there was a gap in the filming of those scenes, I would sort of take myself off to a room quietly and just kind of keep it on the go a bit.
I have to say that if you were to ask me why, how come Leslie acts drunk so well, I would have to say it's because she's a very good actor and she can act whatever needs to be acted with complete truth and accuracy. And that really is the bottom line. I mean, what she's doing simply is acting drunk, but she does it with, you know, a great deal of truth. No doubt she's done a lot of research into this over the years. But, I mean, in the end, it's about good acting, and that's what these guys do, basically. And it's as simple as that, I would say.
Hi, Jonathan Romney, Independent on Sunday. This is initially a question for Mike Lee, but I'd like to hear other people's opinions as well. Among other things, your films have over the years kind of mapped out the changes in British culture and society. Given that under the last Conservative government, perversely, it was a rather stimulating time for filmmakers because it gave them something to be angry about, do you feel that having a Conservative Prime Minister again is going to have a similarly stimulating effect on British cinema?
That's a very Anglo-centric question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, certainly, if there's any correlation between the anger that we feel and as a result of what's happened in the last few days and the anger that is a necessary ingredient for an artist and therefore a filmmaker, then I dare say that will add fuel to the fire. Personally, and this refers back to the question about from the Egyptian journalist about the looking at ordinary people. For me, you know, in the end, it's about looking at life, about people, about society, and you know what's happened in the British as a result of the British general election is we can look at and feel and care about from our own political points of view. But actually, on another level, it is simply a rich harvest of human folly. And that is, apart from anything else, what I think, in a, I suppose, a detached way, I'm disposed to do when I look at life and make films about it. Now, as to how that impacts, with reference to your question, on the what you call the British cinema as a whole, I wouldn't like to say, except that I would like to think that British films were motivated by things that were going on in society and out there in the real world, as opposed to quasi-synthetic notions of what life is about as in Hollywood movies, which is something that afflicts a lot of British cinema. Do anyone want to add anything?
Yes.
No.
Yes, I'm Sergio Di Giorgi from Italy. I'm a film critic and also a trainer. First of all, I want to thank Mr. Lee for the very deep emotions he gave us with all these extraordinary actors and actresses. I think that it's not a question about to be single or married, but I think that you keep on and talking to us about the with humanity and love and the respect of the loneliness, of despair or joy, also of our lives from Naked, through Secrets and Lies, through Happy-Go-Lucky. My very simple question, or silly question perhaps, is that in this film we don't see the external world in the sense that we only hear about the external world or see it in a very... Have you decided deliberately to concentrate, because it's a very intimate movie, to leave the external world in a second plan, in a certain sense? But there are some scenes, I remember the scenes where Ronnie watched the television, and we hear, I mean, for me, this is my impression, this is the question, the external world in your great film is very far. I mean, have you decided about this, or it's my wrong opinion?
No, I don't think it's... I think it's a good question, and I think you're right in a sense. I don't think... I wouldn't have said that the what you call the external world, that's to say, the rest of the world, is at all very far. I think it's as near and as around them as you would naturally feel it to be. But, I mean, you know... I think the implicit assumption that I make in constructing this film, or a film of this kind, is that, on the whole, audiences will instinctively know the world, or be able, at some useful level, to be able to relate to the world or to give a context to the world that you're looking at. And therefore... It becomes not only unnecessary, but it will probably be a distraction for us to actually bother to have to show that world. That world is implicitly there. And you get... I mean, if you went through the film, you will find dozens and dozens of clues and references and recollections. Right at the end of the film, they're talking about long journeys they made and so forth. So it's all there. So a sense of the wider world that surrounds them is there, but we don't see it, because what we're concerned with is to get right in there in a microscopic way and explore the central core emotional experience. And that's just simply in the nature of the dynamics of this kind of cinematic storytelling and dramatic storytelling.
Allez-y, madame.
Ah bon. Non, non. Ben Hoyle from The Times. In the film, the unhappier characters all drink a lot, and I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the role of alcohol in the film, and what you're sort of aiming at with the portrayal of alcohol in British society. It's not the kind of binge drinking that we read about, it's drinking at home, and where you're going with that.
Well, the film is about pain and how to cope and dealing with pain. And, you know, I don't think the use of alcohol and the way the role that plays... that alcohol plays in people's lives is in any way, shape or form an exclusively British or English disease or phenomenon. I mean, it comes under the general heading of how alcohol, and in some contexts drugs, are the things that people resort to in order to cope with the problems. And so what the film is... I think the point about the alcohol in the film isn't the alcohol itself or the alcoholism itself. It's, you know, it's the pain and the suffering and the struggling and the surviving and the coping that the film is about.
Yes, Armin Kuyumjan from Chile. Mr. Lee, I'm going to misquote the sentence from the famous Russian novel that happy people are the same everywhere and unhappy people are unhappy in their different ways. So taking on from the comments of some previous colleagues, I don't think unhappiness is boring, because you can be unhappy in many different ways. But the question is, would you consider making a film about where there worst problem people have is to decide what to cook for dinner. I mean, okay, maybe a fairy tale, but would you feel up to the challenge to film real people but who don't really have serious problems?
I don't know that I fully understand what you're asking, actually.
Because your films have been with people who have problems, everyday problems, different problems. Would you think it would be possible to film a film where there are no people with problems?
Or when I discover those people, yeah, I will be happy to make a film about them.
Until
that time comes, I'll continue with a naive assumption that everybody's got problems.
Yeah, that's why I said it may be a fairy tale, but just hypothetical.
I would, two things. One is I would refer you to my last film, Happy Go Lucky, which did deal with aspects of what you're talking about. And secondly, apart from anything else, there is a notion creeping in here that Tom and Jerry in this film are people with no problems. I mean, they've got some problems. Mary is one of the problems that they have. So I think, all in all, I think what we have to agree is that the problem-free people in this world don't actually exist. And therefore, to go back to the question, the earlier question, everybody is therefore interesting.
Jenny Barchfield from the Associated Press News Agency right here. Mr. Lee had a question about going from a film like Happy Go Lucky, which you just discussed, has a much more optimistic and sort of life-affirming quality about it, to a film like this, which sort of plumbs the deeper and darker aspects of
Can I interrupt you before you ask the question?
Yes.
I think this film is as life-affirming as Happy Go Lucky. And it may be that it does certainly deal in the more obvious way with what you call deeper and darker things. But then so did Happy Go Lucky. But the important thing is that I would hate it to be thought that this film, or certainly the way I see it, is that the notion that this film is not life-affirming, because I think it actually is, but perhaps in a more complex way than Happy Go Lucky. But I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to say that to help you focus your question.
I was just wondering, for you, sort of the different places you were in making these two movies, how was it to go from a movie that's so obviously optimistic to a movie that's more nuanced, let's say, and has this sort of darker heart to it? And also, we looked at three seasons in the film. I'm wondering why summer was absent. It wasn't?
You did. We weren't paying attention, with all due respect.
Maybe I blinked.
The longest sequence was the summer sequence.
I thought that was all spring at the beginning.
No. I'm afraid you have to watch the film again. And the bit you're really looking for is the bit where it says summer. But to answer your question, I mean, also, I should have thought it was evidently obvious that it was summer during summer, because the summer things go on. However, to answer your question, you know, the truth is that these kind of films, as far as I'm concerned, look at life in great complexity, and it's a great rich seam. I mean, there's so much to talk about, to look at, to care about, and therefore each film is different. Each film takes a different... I try and make a film each time that is different from the others and takes a different... has a different perspective and takes a different... concerns itself with a different shift, a different concerns about things. But in the end, it's all about... I mean, Jean Renoir did say we all go on making the same film over and over again, and I think that may be true, and... this one deals with these things.
Good morning. I'm Rania Alfar from the Arab Radio and Television. And my question to Mr. Mike and the cast is, this is the first time to see you in person. And what I felt from this Q&A thing is that you're a bit rough, too passionate. You want to convey a message. Either you're impatient to convey it or you feel that people didn't really get it. So how do you all work together, and is what I'm saying right or wrong? Thank you.
Well, I think you're quite wrong to say that, certainly to me, that I think that people don't get it. I think you all get it. And I know that you got it. I was actually in the screening this morning, and I know you got it. And I'm not at all impatient about it. I think it's, you know, I think it's an organic kind of film that I know talks to you in some way, and you each have an individual personal response. So that's where you're wrong.
But I didn't mean the story of this... The message that you want to convey through this movie, is there something more inside you with your passion and you want to convey it, you feel that still it didn't get out, people didn't get it?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Because you said that life is clearer as we grow older and more complicated. Thank you.
I can't speak for anybody else, but personally, it's hard to know an answer to that question. You try and share things with your audience and by what you explore and express. One never feels that one always feels there's further to go or there's more to say, or, you know, you question whether you said what you wanted to say. But in the end, these kind of films, certainly as far as I'm concerned, are not films where I'm very clear about a message. There is no message. It's about, you know, stimulating audiences to care about a whole range of complex things, the thing we call life.
I think that, in a sense, what I thought you were trying to say was that Mike is tough and how do we all work together? I thought that's what you were saying. I think that... What you have to realise, in a sense, is that you mustn't mistake passion, caring, and somebody's great love of what they do to be that something that they're unfeeling and as if toughness is, because the whole point is that it goes down the line to us, says that. We know how he feels about making his films, and we feel the same, really. And because he may come across as being gruff, that's not what he is about. That's not the man. And it's because he cares so much, you know. I mean, he's a proper human being. He couldn't make his films if he didn't. And I'm not sticking up for him because he doesn't need me to.
A funny process as well. I mean, it's not a completely humorless, dour, serious thing. It's a very, very amusing, and we have a lot of fun and a lot of laughs, and we take it seriously. It's not a problem for us.
Yes, I'd say that I've been working with Mike for 20 years on 9 films, and certainly. From what you suggested, I mean, I wouldn't have come back for more after the first one. But that's not the way it is. It's a wonderful collaboration. And Mike is we have such fun making the films. Everyone present is a different challenge, but they're such fun to make. The journey is like a magical mystery tour. I mean, it's difficult to describe, really, but we don't know where we're going, and it is a magical mystery tour with Mike firmly, you know, in the driving seat, but... we have such fun on the way, so no.
And we three actors have been doing it for 30 years.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but I think I didn't make myself clear. I meant too passionate. Sometimes you're too passionate that you're a bit rough and impatient for someone else to understand what you really mean or feel. You want to convey it with passion that you don't make yourself clear. This is what I mean. And to add one more thing, you remind me of Yusuf Shaheen, who's an Egyptian director. Yes, you do.
Well, thank you very much. That's a greater compliment as I could wish for. I fucking rubbish this is.
Good morning. This is Roland Parry from the AFP news agency. I have a question for Mr. Pope, please.
Wave your hand.
Thank you. Hi. A question for Mr. Pope. The camera work in the film is very enjoyable to watch, very subtle, and for example, a moment at the very start of the film where you manage to show us in a very low-key way that the doctor is pregnant which in turn becomes to be very significant in the exchange that she has with her patient. Please, can you explain a little bit in practical terms about how you bring your cameras into this organic process that the actors go through, which Mike Lee has just described?
Well, I would say that this photography, the cinematography, is always mostly very understated and very quiet, and there are no real tricks involved that get in the way of the telling the story. So that it's very you cut through all that, and so you're looking directly into hopefully their lives and the way they live them without any cinematic tricks. And the same goes not only where we put the camera, place the camera, which is never arbitrary, but is something that Mike and I work out on every scene very carefully as to where the camera is put. And Mike is a master of the choreography of the camera and the actors. But also, it's very much with the whole approach of lighting that the actual lighting is very understated, real, but heightened, obviously, but very natural, so that you're able to cut through all of this and go to the heart of the story without any cinematic big tricks involved.
It's interesting that, of course, that Dix talks about there being no cinematic tricks, and it's absolutely true that he's, of course, right that he means no gratuitous pyrotechnics.
Absolutely.
But at the same
self-conscious
time...
Self-conscious ones.
Self-conscious ones, as yeah. Dix says. But at the same time, I would have to point out that the most sophisticated and profound trickery on his part, of the best kind, is at work in this film. I mean, each season, Dick has shot in a different, on a different film stock and in a different mode, and the whole the work that we did to prepare and to decide how to look at the film. And how the film should look, I should say, is, you know, very much, and how the film should be designed, very much paralleled the preparation work involving the actors. And of course, the great thing when we come to shoot these films, which is the thing that matters most, is that there's a great harmony between the disciplines on all sides of the camera, and that's what I think obviously filmmaking must be about.
Yeah, hello, sorry, it's me again. This time with a question for Mr. Broadbent and Mrs. Sheen. I apologise for asking... Not again! Sorry. I have to apologise because it's a very banal question and you're going to be asked it 10,000 of times, and I just want to have the honour to be the first one to ask you. What, in your opinion, is the secret between Tom and Jerry's long, warm and happy relationship? I don't see them as a perfect couple, but a very enviable couple. And how do they do it?
Well, I suppose it grew out of the fact that they met when they were very young. I mean, in the back work that we did, they met at university on their first day. And their relationship grew from there. So it's, you know, they went to university in the 60s, so until the film starts, it's, you know, 2010. So, I mean, you've got all those years that we worked out a foundation for their relationship. And because of the characters that we were playing and that are in the film, they fell in love with each other. They had their separate existences, their work. But they were very family, and it just grew out of that. Just...
I think they were very much a couple who had... there are such couples who had found their life partners very naturally, and their trust and love for each other underpinned everything, and including how they deal with their difficult friends. And they trust each other and give each other the time and the space to allow these other people to come into their lives without questioning it and without judging it. So, but it is They're very lucky, a lucky couple. To
but they're obviously very good parents too. I think that's important. And I think there's a tendency to talk about them as a pair in relation to Mary and perhaps Ken. But, you know, they're obviously incredibly good parents. I mean, they're very successful parents, and they've obviously worked at it and made it work, and they've known how instinctively how to do it properly, as a result of which they have the kind of relationship with their adult son, which is the best kind of relationship you can have with your child. And I think you see in that relationship, and you see in the way that they welcome Katie into their world, that they are naturally open, generous, and adaptable. And that's, you know, and I think their love of the natural world, and I mean Tom's love of the organic world and something that they share, all of that is part of what makes them whole people and successful in the relationship.
Dernière question.
You talked about the quasi-synthetic representation of life that Hollywood films and so many British films attempt now. Is the kind of cinema that you're making here an endangered species? Is it something that we need to do more to nurture?
The reason I don't think it's an endangered species at all is because the very good news is that new technology makes it possible for young filmmakers to get out there and look at the world and distill it and record it with at little or no cost and without the clutter that is traditionally associated with getting movies up. And the cinema of the future, I feel very positive about, because there is, whilst it may be true that there is still those dinosaur notions that the only valid movies are cynically commercial heavyweight operations. Nevertheless, the kind of cinema that is burgeoning and growing and will be very evident in the cinema of the near or perhaps not so near future is one that is about looking at the world and capturing it and saying things about it, the real world. And so I am personally optimistic about that.
Well, it's nice to end on a positive thing about the future of cinema. Thank you, Mike Lee. Thank you, all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well done.